Well, as Stan said, well, I'll give you an update on where Jim Jacobs is. For most, for all of you who know Jim, he's our dear brother who has provided a pastoral leadership for Huddle for its 5 years, 4.5 years. And Jim's doing well. He's still at St. Vincent's. Carolyn is doing well. She's at home. Carolyn had a lower lobe of her lung taken out because of lung cancer. And the amazing thing is that they don't believe there's going to be any further radiation or chemo needed at this point. And that's really an answer to prayer. Jim's in good spirits. I spoke with him late midday yesterday afternoon. The issue is that the medication has caused his bone marrow to not kick start on its own. So it's kind of got it suppressed. So he gets plasma just about every day and then every other day right now. So just be praying that his plasma would kick in and do what its job is. The medication kind of stripped his bone marrow, and so now it's kind of like jump-starting your vehicle every day. So we're trying to get the body to do that. So be praying for Jim. He's in good spirits. He feels good. He says he lays in bed. He walks a little bit every day and goes to the bathroom. Other than that, that's all he's doing. So he is saying he's reading a couple books, and as you can imagine, Jim's growing. So we're thankful for that. How many of you were able to be here last week when Jim Butcher talked about grandkids and kids? Well, you owe it to yourself, men, that we're not able to be here, to go out and listen to it. It was profound. And I just know one of the things that I think I want to encourage on the outset is make sure that you take something away to apply every week and just do one thing. I took Jim's challenge to take my whole prayer life for my kids to the next level. And, like all of you, I'm sure you pray for your kids and pray all of that. But asking the question was how can I pray more intelligently for you? Man, that blew me away. And I thought, I've never asked that question. And so I asked my 8-year-old and I asked my 17-year-old. And there's immediate impact. My little 8-year-old was going through the things that second graders go through, and she's got some relationship issues and all that. And I told her, honey, it's just starting. You know, you're going to have these kind of things to work through all your life. But when I asked her, I said, how can I pray more intelligently for you? She just told me some of the things that she asked. She had an answer. And I was blown away for starters. And so I started praying with her and praying for her away from that. Yesterday, she and her mother were talking, her mother tells her, like we do, hey, honey, we're praying for you. And she says, Mom, that's really neat because Dad's praying for me too. Unbelievable. So I thank you, Jim. Thank you for that input. And guys that didn't hear here on KokomoHuddle.org, go out and listen to it. Share it with somebody else. I've told several people you need to go out and hear this talk because it was profound. And I greatly appreciate that, Jim, for your effort. Well, today I drew the short straw for how to talk about being happily married. There's a lot of other people, as you well know, who could probably do a much better job in relationship to that, but I do. It's a subject that's very near and dear to me because I want to be happily married. I understand in a group this size, I mean, there's some guys here who, even to talk about marriage in general, it's a tough subject. It's a hard subject. There's some of you men who are here and you're single. You say, I've never been married. And I don't know, as I hear you other guys talk about marriage, I'm not sure I want to. There's others of you who are happily married and your wife's happy and you're blissfully going through life, and that's great. Some of you are happy, but she's not so happy. And that may be a problem that you're still, coming to grips with, but most of us tend to rate our marriages higher than what our wife thinks they are. There's others where your wife may be happy and you're not so happy. And you're kind of struggling through some things and trying to think through that. And then some of you are in situations where neither of you are happy. And there's probably some men in this room who've talked and had discussions recently with your spouse that says, hey, I'm not sure I'm going to make this work any longer. And there's probably some guys who are going through divorces right now. And there's guys who've already been through those. And I want to say on the outset that I think it's so crucial that number one, that every one of us is here because no matter what your situation, you have something to share at the table that God's taught you, is teaching you, or is going to teach you. And so don't think, it doesn't fit my particular situation. The other thing is that marriage is the divine institution that God has used to picture our relationship with Him. So when it's under attack, we shouldn't be surprised. The reason it's under attack in our own lives and the reason it's under attack in our culture is because it is what God says is the physical representation of how God and us relate together. That's why it's so critically important that we have clear thinking and clear understanding about a marriage and how it is to work. And God does desire that we be happily married. It's chapter 9 in the book, and I would challenge you to go and look at that. And it has some good discussion questions at the end if you don't have a copy, or you can get one. I think they're $1 or $2 out there. But it's a great thing as it relates to our understanding. My wife shared with me a book that she had seen one time, and it had to do with wives, but I kind of switched around the title. And the title would go like this: You Can Be the Husband of a Happy Wife. You can be the husband of a happy wife. And she kind of had a switch on that and said, you can be a happy husband of a wife. The point being, really, that happiness in your relationship begins with you and God. And it's not about your wife. It really has to do with an understanding of the greater significance of that marriage relationship. And really, as you think about what our roles are, when we understand marriage and what our responsibilities are, they're really pretty simple. There's really only three primary roles that the Bible teaches that a husband has in a marriage. And the first one is to be a student of your wife. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, if you want to go look it up, verses 7 I listed, is to be a student. Actually, the Greek word simply means to go to school on your wife, to be a diligent studier of her. The second one is in Ephesians chapter 5, which talks about sacrificial love, that we are to love our spouse sacrificially as Christ loved the church. In other words, giving yourself up for it. And Jim asked the great question, would you live for your kids? Would you die for them? The question is, would you live for them? The same question applies today. Would you die for your spouse? Yeah, maybe I don't want you to go too far in that discussion sometimes, but the answer should be, yeah, I die for my spouse, but would you live for him? Will you live for her? Will you pick up, the things in your life that you need to pick up? The last responsibility is really the responsibility that gets messed up in most of our minds, because it's really a servant role. Now, the world and the culture has tried to caricature us to make us think that leadership is about a top-down approach to living. But from Jesus' vantage point, in Mark chapter 10, it says, don't be like the Gentiles who lord their leadership over someone. But it says, I came to serve and to minister. If the King of Heaven came to serve and to minister, if He came and take the lowly position, then leadership is a bottom-up approach. Leadership is coming around our spouse and saying, what can I do to come under her to make her more successful? And when we do that in every way, we do it as it relates to her mental or spiritual well-being. We provide servant leadership. Is what questions should I be asking my wife to be the kind of prayer warrior for her? The same question that Jim asked last week about our kids, we ought to be asking our spouse. How can I pray for you more effectively? Even those of you who are in a divorce situation, you ought to be praying for your ex-wife. You're going to have that relationship, even in that context, all the rest of your life. And so as it relates to that, some of you who are not married yet, you need to be praying for your wife that is to come. Some of you who are widowed, okay, need to continue to recognize and realize that God provided that, and you're in the station that you're in. God has a plan for you right now, maybe to help your kids and grandkids, maybe to help some other men at a table today who need your insight. So we are all impacted by this piece of understanding as to what it does to be a husband. Well, I've been working on some thoughts for really about 5 years, and I've not shared them in a public context, but I wanted to share a couple of them to you this morning, or this afternoon, and it really has to do with an analogy of the game of golf and the first role that we're supposed to have, and that is being an understanding husband, being a student of your wife. Now, for most those of you who are not golfers, don't worry about it. I think that it can apply. You can take whatever sport or hobby that you have, and there's some good application. If you're a fisherman or if you're a bowler or whatever it is, you think into your applications. But for me, I started playing golf when I was 12 years old because I had my uncle, who was a golfer, paid for me to have some lessons. That's what he gave me as a birthday present. Well, then I had a buddy of mine who was 4 years older than myself, and his name was Cliff, and Cliff had a bag that he gave me. Now, it was one of those brown bags, Naugahyde. You remember Naugahyde? You don't have to, how many Naugas had to give up their hide for that little piece of machinery. But I mean, this set of clubs, I mean, it was old when I got it. You know, but he gave me, you know, a few irons, and he gave me a 3-wood and a 5-wood, which he called a trick shot pony. He could use that 5-wood to put it anywhere, I'm telling you. But he taught me how to use that 5-wood, and I started playing golf on a regular basis as a kid. And we played once or twice a week in a local course there, and I learned to love the game. But I realized the value of that equipment that he gave me. What made the equipment valuable was not because he spent much money on it. He had already gotten a nicer set. But what made that equipment valuable is because he gave it to me. A year ago in 2007, my 47-year-old friend Cliff died of a heart attack. I spoke at his funeral, and I told the story of him giving me this golf bag. And I spoke at this funeral of his life and what it meant to me, because it creates such value, and I appreciated the equipment that he gave me. A few years ago as well, somebody gave me, another friend of mine who cares about me, and gave me a set of Callaway irons and a Big Bertha golf club. Now, you always got to be careful when you talk about marriage and Big Bertha in the same context. It's not a wise connection. But in light of that, I appreciated the equipment. And the thing I loved about this is I'd never had a set of Callaway, you know, woods and irons. And it gave me, you know, some clubs that I'd never hit in that particular way. Now, it didn't affect my game a whole lot. But it did make me feel good about those grips were nicer. And, you know, it was just took me up a whole new level as it related to the game. Now, and every once in a while, you know, when you play and you hit that one shot that keeps you coming back the next time, you know, on hole number 17, you're thinking, I'm never playing again. But maybe you get one shot and you think, okay, I'll come one more time. Well, I mean, the thing that makes it very exciting in terms of that is that the equipment, once again, it's not that the Callaway Golf Club changed my life. But more importantly, as I began to think about it, it's that, you know, I love the game of golf. It has some great lessons in it, and it's an enjoyable thing for the most part, and it's enjoyable competition, but it was a friend who gave it to me. Well, I chose a verse for you today that reminds us of what our responsibility is as a husband, and I chose it intentionally because it's one of the probably most men's favorite verse in the Bible, if they're really honest. Although the man and his wife were both naked, they were not ashamed. That's a great verse. I don't know about you, but I feel real good about that verse. And I don't feel bad about feeling good about that verse. Now, our culture would suggest that we should feel bad, but unfortunately, we're the wrong guys feeling bad. We of all people ought to have a proper view of sexual relationship with our wife. But we of all people talk about it the least. It's on television every night, it's in every commercial, it's in every magazine that comes to your home, it's in every advertisement, it's in every misuse, it's on every internet channel of the misuse of what God intended for our relationship with a spouse to be. Of all men who ought to possess and understand the role of that whole being naked and not ashamed with our wife, we ought to understand that. We ought to grasp it, and we ought to be able to talk about it in a way that says, guys, this is an important, significant area of our lives. But I want us to understand what God intended for it. Because as you look at your relationship with the, you know, as you consider golf and your spouse, there's a few things that you got to be careful. And in making this transition, I just tell you one story. A man staggered into the emergency room with two black eyes and a 5-iron wrapped tightly around his throat. Naturally, the doctor asked him what happened. Well, it was like this, said the man. I was having a quiet round of golf with my wife, and she sliced her ball into a pasture of cows. Well, we went to look for it, and while I was rooting around, I noticed one of the cows had something white at its rear end. I walked over and lifted up the tail, and sure enough, there was my wife's golf ball right in the middle of the cow's butt. That's when I made my mistake. So what did you do? Asked the doctor. Well, I lifted up the tail and yelled to my wife, hey, this looks like yours. There's no good ending to that story. So that's what I hope not to do, and I want you to know that everything I'm about to say I have cleared with my wife. The The first thing I think we have to understand as it relates to that, and I just share two things quickly, and that is this. Number one, equipment matters. What was it that attracted you to your wife? Well, you probably saw her off at a distance, and you didn't know her, but you were attracted because you saw she was beautiful. To you. Now, thankfully, there's a pot for every lid. And there's a lid for every pot. And every man ought to feel that your wife is the most beautiful person you ever laid eyes on. And as a result of that, you appreciate the equipment. God created women to be different. Have you noticed that? And particularly your wife. Well, when I began to think about that, equipment matters, and I began to think back to golf and its relationship, you know, the difference that made this equipment important to me was the fact that God had given it to me through these friends. Understand this, guys, we don't need to feel bad when we're attracted to equipment. You don't need to feel negative about that. But what God said is there's a way and a place to understand the value of that equipment. I was going to have Tommy hit a golf ball for us today, but I didn't think he could do near as well as when he made the shot before. But in relationship to that equipment, we have to understand that God intended for that equipment to be richly enjoyed. In fact, Proverbs chapter 5 said, "Be thou ravished with the breasts of the wife of thy youth." God intended for our sexuality to be something, to be a motivating factor in our lives. And in fact, He's the one who put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden naked. We didn't create that. We didn't make something up and have this desire that is manufactured by ourselves. Now, can it be misused? Well, absolutely. And that's the whole problem with everything in our life, that God richly creates for our good. Satan is going to create a counterfeit and make it seem like it's not good. He's going to create a cheap substitute. And what God intends for us to recognize and realize is that God wants our lives to be different as a result of our understanding of this truth. But when you think about the role of your relationship and understanding of something, I've lost my place in my notes here, guys. As it relates to your understanding that role in your with your wife, God has given us four things in how that we need to be treating. Number one, your equipment with care. That's the point. The point of having that equipment is treating her with care. And one of the great responsibilities that you and I have in that context is that when we treat our wives with care, what we understand is that God created this woman uniquely different. God put her in our lives for a unique purpose. And that the only way for us to understand that role is to be fruitful and multiply. God intended that to be part of that relationship. Later on in the book of Hebrews, He says, God richly created the marriage bed and made it honorable in all. But whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge, the Scriptures is clear. There's not a man that's not misused sex in their life in this room. There's not one man. And if you have and you're saying, no, I'm perfect on that, you're lying to yourself, sir. There's not a man that's not misused in our minds and either in our bodies or both. And so the result of that is saying, well, God, You intended this equipment to be enjoyed and cherished and honored, and yet I've misused it. And so consequently, we wonder then why then we seek to find that satisfaction somewhere else, either in our mind or our body or both. And what the Lord teaches us here is, look, I want you to understand that women are not sex objects. It's the one of the ways for a man that we come into this whole sense of wanting to know our wife. Even the world's misused that. Did you know that the first time that sexual relations are mentioned in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 2, you know what the Hebrew word for to know is? To know intimately and deeply? Yada. Seinfeld made that word famous. Yada, yada, yada. All of us have probably said that. Yada, yada, yada. You know what that means? That's the Hebrew word for sex. Jerry Seinfeld, a Jewish man, knew exactly what he was doing when he put that in there. The point is, yada, 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 to know your wife sexually is what makes us interested. But guys, the door into our sexual relationship with our wife is not the end goal. That's why when you misuse it in our own lives, which we all have, we feel guilt and we feel sorrow and we feel conviction and we feel bad. Why? Because when I misuse that physical part of my relationship with my wife, or prior to my wife, or whatever is in our background, we get convicted about it. And then it later causes us to not care, to show a miscare, or to show our wife and call her suspect, or to doubt her motivation, when it's really us that's the problem. And so we put off on her what our own sins are. And the important thing for us to realize, guys, is that God intended this whole physical relationship to be something that is to know your wife. But that knowledge of is understanding that she's a teacup and not Tupperware. Okay? I brought one of my wife's favorite teacups. You'll notice I put it in bubble wrap because if I break it, I'm toast. Okay? It's in bubble wrap. It's all wrapped up. I'm good to go. But you know where this in our house is? It's up on the top shelf. In fact, I had to go to the top shelf to get it out. Okay? I asked for permission, by the way, to have it here today. You know where I found this little piece of thing that, you know, could hold a little something? It was in the bottom drawer. Why? Because at our house and probably at your house, you got Tupperware downstairs so you can throw it around. You don't have to care about it. But your wife, she's a teacup. And she has to be treated with this incredible care. In fact, in Ephesians chapter 5, when God was trying to teach us how to do that, He said, cherish your wife as you would your own flesh. God assumed and knew that we were going to take care of us. But He said, give the same kind of care to your spouse that you give to you. Treat her as a teacup and not Tupperware. And that's, I think, the main thing that we have to understand from understanding. The door into our wife's physical world, which is generally and humanly speaking the door that the world says come in first. Just get to know her physically, then hopefully you'll emotionally connect, or you'll actually use the emotional connection to get to her physically. Then maybe you mentally connect and I don't worry about spiritually. God's way says, hey, be a spiritual servant to your wife. Meet her needs spiritually. Then learn to know how she thinks and understand and study her needs. If you do that, you'll know her emotionally, and all the equipment that you need will be available to you. If we do first things first, God says that's the way He intended it. Every one of us has misused that process because we've come in the physical door. We've used emotions, her emotions, because again, I tell my 17-year-old daughter, honey, whatever 17-year-old boy he tells you, he's lying. Why? And I tell her, I was a 17-year-old boy. I don't care what he's saying. He's lying. Don't believe a word of it, because he will tell you anything, and every one of us have. But what God then teaches us is, look, it's got to flip that around. Guys, let's be godly men. Let's come together and talk about the sexuality and that whole thing in the context of about serving my wife, of sacrificing. The goal of sex is not getting, but giving. And when I give and I sacrifice at that level, what God does is He fills up my what I really need. Why men and go through midlife crises is because we get 40 and our libido starts heading south. I'm 44 and I notice. And so what do? We try to recapture our manhood and we go out and say, well, you know what? If I just had that, I'd feel better about me. That's baloney. That's Satan's lie to get me to look somewhere else and say, what I have is not good enough. And what God wants for us is, guys, know your wife. Know your wife. Don't know somebody else's wife. Don't know somebody else's daughter who's on the screen. Don't know somebody else's child. Know your wife. You keep your eyes focused there. And then the second thing is this. The second thing is pin placement. Do you play the same course often? Most of you do. Do they change the pin placement every day? Yeah. Most good courses change the pin placement every day. Why is that? Keep the challenge up. But how many of us would say, you know what? I never can understand my wife. She changes every day. Man, I've tried to understand that and I just can't get it. It's so frustrating when I think I've got her figured out and she changes. Well, my challenge to you is this, guys. One of the things we have to do in understanding our wife is realize the key role of pin placement. Because your wife changes every day, and the reason is to keep your attention. We need a challenge. That's why when most of us got married, what we do when we first got married, we let up. We stopped pursuing. And then we started pursuing our careers. We got the trophy wife to us, and then what? We stopped pursuing her. And 7, 8, 10 years into the marriage, she's withered away on a vine, and we realized then one morning, man, I don't know this person. Or 25 years in, you poured all your energy into your children, and now it's just you and her, and man, you're not even sure you like her. You stop pursuing because you didn't understand pin placement and how God had it in your life. God created our wives in such a unique way so that we would understand pin placement and we'd be willing to pursue every day, because you could play the same course every day, and you know what? Oh, it's in the back part of the green today. I'm going to adjust my shot. The purpose of pin placement is to change your shot. God gave it to you as a gift. And as we do that, then we change our shot. We realize that the things and the care that God wants to draw out of me that doesn't come natural, that comes difficult. To get to the green of your heart, your wife's life, is to get to that area of her where she feels like she knows you and that you want to know her. When you as a husband have the potential to make her the happiest person on earth, believe it or not, guys, she married you because she liked you. What each of us have done to them afterwards is our own fault in relationship to that. And every one of us are guilty. Now, since you and I in our marriages have probably made them, our spouses, the saddest at times, we have the potential to make her the happiest as well. So how do you pick up on the stress that she's under? How do you pick up under the things that she needs, or care with the kids, or feeling the preparation for whatever she's got focused on, her own body maintenance, or her sexual needs, or the children's constant pressure, no matter what age they are? We all have similar pressures in ways that are unique to us. And we would all say, you know what, I don't think my wife understands, and she probably doesn't. But what God has given us, guys, is the capacity to bear up under great load and great pressure. God has made us love a challenge. And the challenge for us is to step up and to meet her ever-changing needs, to come to an understanding that God has given her to us as a gift. And He wants us to pursue under-par living in an over-par world. Under-par living in an over-par world. I've never played a round of par golf. Some of you may have, but I never have. But I tell you what, it didn't stop me from playing again. My brethren, as it relates to our marriages, understanding, let's pursue and be men of integrity who pursue under-par living with our spouse in an over-par world. God, help us as we discuss these things. In Your name, amen.